It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. My guest, if you're a regular listener, you've heard him before, Max Richmond. He's president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and thank God for them. This membership organization promotes the financial security, health and well-being of current and future generations of maturing Americans. And the numbers are staggering as to how many people actually turn 65 in a year. I found this interesting as I was looking on the website. The National Committee is, of course, nonprofit and nonpartisan, so keep that in mind, but was founded in 1982 by former Congressman James Roosevelt, son of Franklin D. Roosevelt, who I'm sure you all remember signed the Social Security Act into law, so I thought that was very appropriate. Max, thank you for letting us call you today in Washington.
Well, glad to be with you.
So one of the things we're going to talk about today, every Medicare beneficiary gets the Medicare and You Handbook. It's like their Bible, and it tells them all kinds of information about Medicare. And what's happening is that the 2019 book, which will be out, I believe, in September, is now not as unbiased, maybe, as it could be. And it's the concerns for Medicare for senior advocates like yourself is that it's skewing towards Medicare Advantage plans, like the old privatization of Medicare that was attempted many years ago. What's happening with this book that is supposed to be the best book for seniors to look at?
Well, Carol, you're being very diplomatic when you say it's not as unbiased as it could be. It really tilts the playing field towards Medicare Advantage. I'm not sure why that is. I have some suspicions about it. But the handbook is supposed to give straightforward information and be presented fairly and accurately and give beneficiaries a clear idea of what's best for them, traditional Medicare or Medicare Advantage. And unfortunately, we've seen the draft. We've commented. We're not too pleased with the draft. Now, possibly it'll change, but I'm not holding my breath on that. But the handbook, I believe, is distorts and mischaracterizes the facts between Medicare Advantage and traditional Medicare in some significant ways that I think could lead to beneficiaries. You mentioned the number of people turning 65 being enormous. It's in fact 10,000 people, 10,000 every day turn 65 and qualify for Medicare. So that's how many people have a stake in getting good information, and I'm afraid the yearbook, if it adheres to the draft when it comes out, is not going to provide them the factual information they need.
Now, Medicare Advantage plans are private insurance companies offering Medicare. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so part of the problem is that they could be more expensive, and they're also more clustered. So you would be using a Medicare Advantage plan in your own area. Probably not good if you travel or if you go to visit someone and you get ill somewhere else or you happen to land out of network.
Right. That's the heart of the issue. You've said it very well. The handbook fails to clarify the distinction between traditional Medicare and Medicare Advantage. I mean, there are people who might be find Medicare Advantage to suit them and their health situation better, but they ought to have correct information. The handbook does not make clear, as you just pointed out, that one of the main differences is traditional Medicare will provide beneficiaries access to every Medicare participating provider, everybody that accepts Medicare assignment, throughout the country. And Medicare Advantage limits that access to the network in a particular geographic area. People need to understand that, especially if they're moving around, traveling a lot. They need to know the differences between these two options. And the handbook, furthermore, seems to suggest that Medicare is a better deal, is less expensive for beneficiaries overall. But that I think, should be qualified, because there are a lot of different situations and factors that will determine the cost of one plan versus the other. And in many cases, traditional Medicare is the best, least expensive choice. And you hit on a point that I think will be a shock to anybody that selects Medicare Advantage, that the handbook seems to indicate that prior authorization for medical services under Medicare Advantage is a benefit. That's the implication if you read the draft. But in fact, it's an obstacle to getting health care, and that is an obstacle or a hurdle, if you will, that traditional Medicare patients do not face.
And I think seniors are confused, because the whole thing is confusing, over the difference between a Medicare Advantage plan and a Medigap plan.
Right. A Medigap plan, so many, many Medicare beneficiaries that are in traditional Medicare will also buy a supplement or a Medigap plan to cover those costs that are not covered by Medicare, whether, you know, it's a deductible, which it is in most cases, or some coverages that they want that are not covered under Medicare. But that's very different than Medicare Advantage. Medicare Advantage is totally outside of traditional Medicare. It limits access to a specific network of providers in a specific geographic area. And the Medicare supplement, a Medigap policies, which they're often called, just provide additional benefits for those that stay in the traditional Medicare program.
And the Medicare Advantage plans can be expensive, or they can be very inexpensive, depending on the drug plan that goes along with it.
Right, the drug plan and other benefits. You know, I know that some of the Medicare Advantage plans, and as I want to say again, some of them may be a better choice for certain individuals. Our issue is, let's lay out the facts in a straightforward way so that people can make an informed decision. If you watch television at all, you will see you'll be bombarded with ads for Medicare Advantage plans that extol the virtues of the the particular Medicare Advantage plan, and those include things like sometimes health club memberships. That may be important to a group of people, but I think to a lot of people, what's more important is getting their health care. And, you know, they may be sold a Medicare Advantage plan because of some extraneous benefits, like a health club membership coverage.
Well, and some may have vision and dental, which may be important to some people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, we have been lobbying strenuously to expand traditional Medicare to cover vision, dental, and hearing. And there are bills in the Congress that we support that would add those benefits. Medicare is a great program. It's not perfect. It has some gaps. And I think if we can have these benefits added perhaps next year, or at least the beginning of some coverage for vision, dental, and hearing, it would make the Medicare plans more appealing. Now, I don't know where Medicare Advantage lobbying is on that, but we're doing we're doing our best to support those kinds of efforts.
And all of those are critical because if someone has dental problems and they're not eating enough, they can become malnourished. And the next thing you know, they're in a nursing home, and who's paying for that?
Absolutely. You know, it's some of the connections between these hearing, dental, and vision go beyond appearances. For example, if you're hearing, you have severe hearing loss, and you can't afford hearing aids, which are obviously are very expensive, you may not be able to hear what your doctor's telling you. You may not be able to hear alarms. That goes to safety, not just convenience or appearance. And as you mentioned, nutrition is important and is tied to proper dental care. So one of the things that when we started lobbying on particularly adding a benefit for hearing loss, we started working with a doctor at Johns Hopkins University who has made some groundbreaking research studies into the connection between hearing loss and dementia. And it isn't just about lack of social interaction if you don't hear well or don't hear at all. It's about the connection, actual changes in the brain that take place that are related to hearing loss that seem to be related to dementia. So having benefits added to cover hearing, dental, and vision to traditional Medicare could provide a savings in the long run if it forestalls dementia or nutrition issues, safety issues, if someone is not able to see properly. So it's not a it's a benefit that we hope is added to traditional Medicare, and there are some Medicare Advantage plans that do offer that.
When we come back, we will talk more about that and what the chances are of that being successful. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. So, Max, the bill that you're supporting to have Medicare cover hearing and vision and dental, what do you think the chances are of that actually happening?
Well, there are a lot of co-sponsors. I don't think at this point in the congressional session there's enough time to get them something like that through. But, you know, we have been working with a lot of challengers that want to are trying to be elected in November, and we have a questionnaire when we interview them, and to a person, they would support adding these benefits that we talked about to a traditional Medicare. So, is it going to happen before the November election? Doubtful, but I think there's a strong chance. Depending on the outcome of the November election, that there'll be enough momentum to at least begin to have some coverage. It may not be what we want, but it will open the door.
It all feels very short-sighted to me that there would be a problem covering those because people are going to cite budget and money. And yet, as we said before, if someone gets dementia or they become malnourished and they end up in a nursing home, that's so much more costly than getting someone the nutrition they need, the dentures they need, the hearing aids that they need to keep them viable, aside from it's the right thing to do.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the saying, penny wise and pound foolish,
yes.
I think that's what you were just talking about. And it's hard to get members of Congress, policymakers, to look at the long term and not just to what will the cost be next year, but what kind of savings are possible over an extended period of time, and not to mention the well-being of those older people.
I wanted to talk to you about Medigap policies because when someone is new to Medicare, they're guaranteed to be issued a Medigap policy. They can get a Medigap policy if they want it. If they switch, let's say they enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan, which is really privatization of Medicare, if they enroll in that and then they opt to go back to traditional Medicare, because again, you can't have both, they want original Medicare and they want the Medigap policy, can they still do that?
No, that becomes another obstacle. I understand the logic behind that of wait, you know, the logic being that if you wait to get some kind of coverage, whatever it is, until you have a problem, then that skews the cost to the beneficiary, and so there are some rules. But although I understand the logic, why isn't that made clear in the handbook? I think at this point that is not made clear, and there are already too many people that become Medicare beneficiaries and assume a kind of coverage that is not included in Medicare, so, and in Medicare Advantage. So it's important. What we're trying to do, and we're beginning a media campaign with an excellent nonprofit out of Hartford, Connecticut, the Center for Medicare Advocacy, led by Judy Stein, to do whatever we can with the resources we have to go beyond the Medicare handbook so that people do understand what's at stake and how important their choice is going to be in their health care in the future.
It's very upsetting that someone can't get a Medigap policy if they're switching back from a Medicare Advantage. That's just not right.
Well, it's not right, but it would at least be, I think, pretty important for someone to factor that in to their decision-making in whether they're going to opt for Medicare Advantage or traditional Medicare. They need to know that. That's our point.
They do need to know that. The Medigap policies, while they can be expensive, are completely comprehensive. You won't pay a copay again. And
yes.
And they will go across the country or anywhere that Medicare is accepted. So that's a huge benefit, and it never ends. So let's talk about the deficit. And you said something on my notes that I thought was profound. You said in 2019, the GOP budget proposal would cut $537 billion with a B, from Medicare, and $1.5 trillion from Medicaid and other health programs, and it demonstrates grossly misplaced priorities. Talk to me about that. What is happening, and how is there anything that the common person can do to prevent this type of pilfering of Medicare monies?
Well, absolutely. They can let their member of Congress, House or Senate, know that this is not acceptable, and that they'll remember the positions members of Congress take on that when it's time to vote. You know, when the tax bill passed, and all those people who voted for it, who had been railing against budget deficits for years, for decades in some cases, but they voted for this, even though it added $1.5 trillion to the federal deficit. They were silent about that. And what we were concerned about was once that passed, there would be all of a sudden there would be proclamations of we got to do something because we've got this huge deficit, and that something is cutting Medicare and Medicaid. And certainly we see that's what's happened in the budget that the president has sent up to the Congress, the last two. There have been proposals to make deep cuts in these programs and to offset the cost of the tax bill. That happened within days. I think the day after the tax bill was signed by President Trump, the Speaker of the House, Speaker Paul Ryan, announced, well, now we're going to have to look at entitlements. That's the way these programs are referred to. And leading senators from states with a lot of seniors, like Senator Rubio from Florida, expressed the same position. So, what we feared would be the other shoe that would drop, in factually materialized, and that's what we're facing now. So The way to change this trajectory of these budget plans is to vote and support members of Congress who are committed to not cutting Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. Medicaid, by the way, is not just for poor people. 62% of nursing home payments are through the Medicaid program. Who's in a nursing home? Seniors and disabled and children. So when Medicaid is cut, it's not being affected. It's not only affecting poor people, it's affecting older people. These people that are now qualified for help for Medicaid in nursing homes, they weren't always poor. They became poor because they're in a nursing home for a year or two. That costs $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year, whatever savings they've had disappear, then they count on the Medicaid program, and that is at risk in these budgets.
And when you talk about Medicaid, people often think of somebody who could be working and they're not working and they're just taking the state, and it's terrible. But it is. All the seniors in Medicare does not cover for nursing homes.
That's
so those
correct.
People, you're talking about the very elderly who need that because they don't have enough money. So there are very real sad cases on the other end of these decisions.
Yes, well, you're absolutely correct. And it's important that we understand that Medicaid is really, it's really the only help for nursing home care that's out there. Unless you have been able to buy and afford and buy a private long-term care policy, which is very expensive, and not that many people have the ability to have that kind of coverage, and they will rely on the Medicaid program in a very short period of time, given the high out-of-pocket cost, even if they've saved some money. For nursing home care or home and community based care as well.
It's very distressing that this is happening clearly, and so voting in November and calling Congress people probably the best thing that someone can do to, I don't know if you can unring this bell, but making that happen.
If it can be unrung, that's the way to do it.
Max Richmond, thank you so much for being here. You're a wealth of knowledge, as always, and I do appreciate it. Thank you for reaching out and telling me what's happening on the Hill. I hope you have a great summer.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you so much for listening to Senior Talk today. To recap, traditional Medicare, Medicare Advantage plans, Medigap policies. Make sure you know what you're getting. Call your area agency on aging and talk to a state health insurance assistance program, a SHIP volunteer. They will walk you through it. It's a free service, and you can reach it at your area agency on aging. To learn more about the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and Max Richmond, ncpssm.org. ncpssm.org will give you more information on that. And if you'd like to hear this show again and all that Max had to say, log on to WVOMFM.com, and you can listen to it in podcast form. Stay informed. It's the best thing you can do. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk.